This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Playing good, I focus so much on what he's doing offensively, and he's certainly been better on offense over the last few weeks once he came back from that abdominal injury, which really, really took him out for longer than expected, like a month that he missed. But he's also quietly, maybe it's not so quiet anymore, he's been really good defensively, and the trio on court together of Draymond, Jimmy, and Pajemski, they have been elite defensively. And you know what you're going to get with Draymond and Jimmy defensively, but Pajemski, I think most of us view him as, you know, undersized for who he's guarding and maybe not athletically gifted enough to be laterally quick enough to stay in front of some of these elite athletes, but kind of similar to Draymond, of course, on an entirely different level. He's a pretty good team defender, like within the whole team strategy and the team scheme, and he's a good help defender, and he'll double from the blind spot of the ball handler, and he'll poke the ball free from behind. He might not be the best, and this is kind of, I think it describes Dibs, the Warriors' defense as a whole. He might not be the best point of attack defender,
right?
But he is good within the team scheme, and I want your thoughts on that. But first, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. Pods on defense has been kind of quietly one of his bigger contributions to this team.
For sure, and it's something that Steve mentioned on Monday when we interviewed him. I asked him about three-player combos because he has got me really researching that from a number standpoint, and I asked him who his best three-man combo is, aside from Jimmy, Steph, and Draymond, and he said, well, I'm going to throw in Draymond because it's Draymond and Pods, and it's Jimmy. That was the trio that he is absolutely loving right now, and it's because of what you're talking about. Defensively, Pods is really active, and he's not a great on-ball defender, doesn't have a lot of lateral quickness, but positionally, he's usually in the right spot. We know he takes charges better than almost anybody in the association, and he does have active hands, and he doesn't make a lot of careless mistakes with reaching, fouling jump shooters too often. He's a good heads-up defender, and I do think that with Jimmy here now, Jimmy Butler, a guy who is also a good defender, and you can add Gary Payton II in there, who is a good on-ball defender, you suddenly have a team that you can put out there that's more defensive-focused that in the non-Steph minutes can keep you in games.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about the non-Steph minutes, Dibs, is the way that Steve Kerr has planned this and the way that they have like kind of put the puzzle pieces together is Steph and the starters, the normal starting five, they play to begin the game and they play to begin the third quarter. And that's just about it. If the game's competitive down the stretch, they will also at times close, although that might change when Kuminga comes back. And it also depends on matchups and rotations and what is happening in the game and what's going on with the opponent and all that. But generally, of late, Dibs, the Warriors starters have played together to begin the game and to begin the third quarter. Other than that, they don't really share the floor a lot together. And what the Warriors have done is they will pair Steph, because Steph plays like the first 7 minutes of the first quarter, and then he takes the rest of the quarter off and plays the beginning of the second quarter. And he plays again like the first 7 or 8 minutes of that second quarter. What the Warriors have done is they pair Steph along with four other bench players. They pair him with Buddy Hield and with Guy Santos and with GP2 and then Looney. That's the five that they throw out there. So you have Steph leading a bench squad, and Steph is so good enough to carry that squad and make them at the very least slightly above average, like positive. And then you have your other four starters, which includes Jimmy Butler, and it includes Draymond, and it includes Pods and Moody, plus Quentin Post. That's the group that ends quarters And suddenly you have those groups that are without Steph being able to help build you leads. And now, instead of trying to just tread water without Steph on the court, Dibs, you have a group that is actually adding to your lead without Steph. Last night wasn't the best example of it, but the previous like four games were, where you are actually adding to your lead without Steph because you have four starters, and then with Steph on the floor and four bench players, he's still good enough to at least keep that group afloat by itself.
Yeah, and I do think that a lot of that is because the four bench players have all been playing better, and maybe that's Jimmy Butler, who's part of the influence, but it's also Quentin Post, who is just making huge strides, not only as a confident shooter, and he's been knocking him down almost two a game when he gets in there and gets minutes, but he's also learning and getting more offensive confidence. So you do have in your bench crew, if it is Guy and Kevon and GP2, not necessarily the best shooters. You also have Quentin Post and Buddy Hield who can be in there. Buddy should be a good shooter. He's been in kind of a long scuffle for the better part of a couple of months.
He's actually been decent the last like few games. I can bring up the numbers for you. Last night was rough.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
1 of 5 and 1 of 3 from three, but you do have some help when you have Steph out there with the bench crew. But in general, yeah, when Steph is doing like he did last night, playing that way, it doesn't matter who the other four guys are who you're playing with.
Buddy Hield, last 10 games, shooting 42% from the field, 39% from deep.
Okay.
Last 10 games. That's not bad.
No, you'll take 39%.
You'll take 39%. He was also pretty darn bad defensively last night, which is also what really hurts the Warriors.
Yeah.
You brought up Quentin Post, though, Dibs. We were talking about this before we took the air today. I mean, how real is this? Quentin Post, like 18 points last night, 16 in the second half. Pretty good decision by Steve Kerr to go to Post to open the second half. Moses Moody came off the bench in the second half. Post started, which led Draymond down to the four. It allowed Draymond to defend Banchero, which was a big reason why the Warriors turned the game around in the third quarter. And Quentin Post scored 10 points in the first 3 minutes of the second half. 10 of his 18 came in the first 3 minutes of the second half, and he was a big reason why the Warriors got back in the game. It was Post, and it was Steph in the third quarter, and that was just about it. Honestly, I have been incredibly surprised by how good Post has been. It's one thing just to make threes, but also he's shown a little bit more finesse and ability to finish around the rim, too.
And ability to pass, and, you know, like I was saying before, he had that play with Steph where he rolls and Steph gives him a bounce pass and relocates and he puts it right back out to Steph for one of his 12 threes. And you asked, like, is this real? When do we start to realize that it is?
He's just a good player. Like, when does that assumption
come?
Well,
he's played in each of the last 18 games. So in an 18-game stretch, he's averaging almost 10 a game, 9.2. He's shooting 42% from three.
Oh, my God.
93 from the line. He doesn't get there a lot, but he doesn't miss when he gets there. He's shooting 49 from the floor, and all this in 16 minutes. So he's getting the minutes. He's making the threes. He has, you know, four rebounds a game, which is not terrible. He's a 7-footer. You would hope that number would go up, but that's kind of like what Andrew Wiggins was normally averaging. Wiggs would have maybe another rebound a game, but in 16 minutes, he's rebounding. He makes the open three a lot, and he's starting to get more confident, like you're saying, going to the rim. So at what point do you look at this and say, this is real? Because I don't know, like a lot of this is not flash in the pan to me. He's 24 years old. I was joking around in the green room that he's the fifth oldest guy on the team, and that's an exaggeration, but he is older than a bunch of guys on this team.
Let me see.
And I'm looking at it right here. He is older than, man, you go all the way up to, he's almost as old as Trace Jackson Davis. He's older than Moses, Guy, Kuminga, and Pods. And, you know, Yuri Collins. He's older than Yuri Collins.
And Taron Armstrong.
Right.
Two-way Aussie they just signed.
Exactly. So he's coming up on, he'll be 25 here in March, Quentin Post, as a rookie. So you think about him as a rookie, and he is, but then when you look back to his college career, which was long, and it was in the middle of COVID, I don't know if he played 6 years in college, but The dude is almost 25, so he's more of a polished player than your average rookie, which is kind of what TJD was last year in the same vein where, you know, TJD actually just had a birthday. He just turned 25 last week.
Happy belated, TJD.
Yep, sorry about that.
Yeah, and Quentin coming up March 21st, so in 3 weeks, a week after Steph's birthday. I was going back and forth with a friend last night, Dibs, at halftime when the Warriors were down 14, and the issue in the first half was the Dubs were just getting picked apart defensively, and some of it was just elite shot-making, and that'll happen. Orlando, not a very good shooting team in general, a pretty bad offensive team, and they were making everything, but there was also some defensive breakdowns. They were getting to the rim at will. They were finishing around the rim at an extremely high clip. There was not a lot of defense for the Warriors inside, and that's kind of the risk you run when your tallest player is Jimmy Butler, and Draymond Green really plays the biggest, and he can play pretty darn big, but when Jimmy Butler's your tallest player on a starting group, that's kind of the risk you run against a gigantic team like Orlando. So I was going back and forth with my friend. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Steve Kerr adjust the group to begin the third quarter. My mind, though, didn't go to Quentin Post, because I felt like it was defense that was needed, not necessarily the offense. My mind went to, well, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Looney start the second half, and they move probably Moody to the bench, and you go Draymond at the four and Looney at the five. And Steve Kerr said, you're on the right track, Grandy.
Nice.
But I'm going to go Quentin Post. And I was a little concerned, because there's no doubt Quentin Post does things offensively that Kevon Looney can never dream of doing. As a floor spacer, and, I mean, Looney's a pretty darn good passer, and he's got this crazy chemistry with Steph that QP doesn't quite have yet, no doubt. But he still can't do what Post can do offensively. But I was worried about the defensive end, Dibs. And honestly, last night, I thought QP, Quentin Post, he held up pretty darn good on the defensive end as well. You can also see him improve. We're talking about passing and footwork and around the rim. You can also see him begin to understand and fully grasp what's being asked of him on the defensive end.
Yeah, and you would hope that the shot blocking can continue. He did get one last night, because you're going to need some rim protection. And, you know, a lot of the problem with Quentin Post and teams are discovering this is if you involve him in a pick and roll, like a 1-5 pick and roll.
Yeah, that's rough.
It's going to be trouble, because he's not going to be able to stay with any guard out there on the perimeter. So maybe the Warriors go to a little bit more zone when he's on the floor. I'm just looking at second half stats, and he played the most minutes on the Golden State Warriors in the second half. 18 minutes and 43 seconds.
And 16 points.
Kevon played the other minutes, 5 minutes, 17 seconds. So tells me that Draymond Green didn't play the five, quote-unquote, at all in the second half, because it was shared between Quentin and Kevon. And that might be another hidden blessing of Quentin Post, is taking some of the burden off Draymond Green to have to go in there and play the five.
Yeah, we can ask Tim Roy about that. Tim Roy coming up on the other side. He is, I imagine the team is in Philly right now as they gear up for the 76ers. We will ask Tim Roy about everything that happened last night in Orlando, including, I mean, where does that rank in his Steph Curry lexicon of great plays and moments that he's called? Because there are so many of them. We can ask him about that when we come back. Tim Roy will join us on the on all guests on 95.7 The Game, including Tim Roy, appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? It's Dibs and Grandy with you. Tim Roy, voice of the Dubs, coming up next on 95.7 The Game.
Curry, three-quarter court, lets it fly. It's good! He hit it! One dribble, one shot. Curry from three-quarter court knocks it down. And if there's anything that might give you some life and some momentum heading into the locker room, it was that.
Dub Nation, it's the voice of the Warriors, Tim Roy. You're listening to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Yes, you are listening to Willard and Dibs, but Mark Willard out today celebrating his daughter's Sweet 16. He'll be back on Monday, so it's Dan Dibley, Mark Randy with you here on 95.7 The Game. And that man you just heard calling Steph Curry's three-quarter court shot and welcoming us back, none other than the voice of the Warriors, Tim Roy, and he joins us now on the River Islands guest line. Tim, first of all, thanks so much for taking some time out of your off day in Philadelphia. That was something special by Steph and the Warriors last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things I kept, you know, reminding myself and hoping to remind the audience was that, you know, we can't take this for granted. It's something special. It's once-in-a-lifetime stuff. And, you know, for him to do it at that age is just remarkable. And it just shows you how much work he puts into it and how, you know, dedicated he is to being, you know, the best shooter in the game, one of the best players in the game. It was quite remarkable. And, you know, the last 7 games, it's been really a team effort, and Jimmy Butler was really good, but Jimmy, you know, looked a little, maybe a step slow last night, and, you know, Steph put the team on his back, and as he's done all these years, and, you know, and once again, here we go. We're watching another unbelievable moment, and you just got to savor every second of it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to stay in that same mind frame, and I just want to tip the cap to you, Tim, because with each successive three, and Grandy put together a montage that we've been playing throughout the course of the day, and with each successive three, you're getting more excited, more animated, and the Curry, the just the growl in your voice. And, you know, it's hard because you're actually doing it and going through it, but I just wanted to tip the cap because you captured the increasing excitement with each and every basket.
Well, I appreciate that. It's easy to him, you know.
Nope, I think we got a connection issue with Tim Roy's cell phone.
Did we lose you?
I think we did. I think we did lose Tim. We'll get back with him in just a second. But
yeah.
I am curious, and I want to ask him, Dibs, just about like his personal rankings of Steph Curry moments. I guess there's a different conversation between moments and like individual moments, like one single shot or like a single game. Like those are different things.
I was thinking the same thing, like, you know, are 50-point games like your children where you love them all equally? He's got 14 of them. Is there one that would stand out for him as, you know, more meaningful or more powerful? Obviously, yesterday is, you know, fresh in his mind and 12 threes and a 65-foot heave that goes and all the rest of it. So, you know, that'll be fun to get his thoughts on that.
Yeah, but then you have like the more like stories of individual games where you have like, I don't know if you remember this, Dibs, but the double bang in OKC, obviously we all remember that game, or we all remember that moment. But that game was absolutely insane. It was the game where Steph rolled his ankle, I think, in the first half, and he missed the final few minutes of the half. I forget exactly when he rolled his ankle, but he rolled his ankle, and it looked pretty gnarly. He missed a chunk, came back, and played great. That was also the game where at halftime, if you remember, it was a national TV game. It was on ESPN, and it was Lisa Salters was doing the sidelines. And that was the game where at halftime, Steve Kerr and Draymond Green had a gigantic blow-up in the locker room.
That's right.
You remember?
Yeah.
And it was Lisa Salters, you know, talking to Mike Breen, and I think it was, I don't know if it was Mark Jackson and Stan Van Gundy, probably, or Jeff Van Gundy probably was, who were on the call at that one. And they go to Lisa, and Lisa's like, yeah, Mike. I mean, there was a Draymond and Steve, they got into it at halftime, and it wasn't just like, you know, disagreement. It was like loud screaming, and there were expletives and all of that. And then the Warriors come back against Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and that era of Thunder team, which you remember in the playoffs that year, pushed the Warriors to 7 games, and the Warriors were down 3-1. Like, that's not an easy team to beat, especially in that arena. And you come back, you force overtime, and Steph hits that shot. So you have the individual moment, the shot, but you have the story of that entire game, which has to be, I mean, it might be the best regular season game, not only in Warriors history, but maybe in NBA history. It was amazing.
That could be hyperbole, but coming off of yesterday, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong because, you know, the things we've seen Steph do, and, you know, we could all talk about favorite moments for the remainder of our career on the radio.
Yeah, I think we got Tim Roy back here on the River Islands guest line. Tim, can you hear us?
I got you. That was weird.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, but you were in the middle of talking about how Steph makes it easy for you. What were you saying?
Well, it just makes it easy in the sense where, you know, you always have to be on your guard. My statistician at halftime looked at me and said, I looked down. I didn't see the shot. I said, you can't look down when he has it because he's always going to take that end of quarter shot. He doesn't care about his percentage. He doesn't care, you know, you see all these guys and they get the ball and they double pump and, you know, they don't get the shot off because they don't want to take the miss. And but Steph doesn't care about that. All he cares about is getting a shot up, hoping it goes in and can help them win. And last night, that shot did that. It's just so much fun to watch and, you know, so lucky to get a chance to do it.
Voice of the Warriors, Tim Roy, with us here on 95.7 The Game. Tim, I was kind of going through my own memory. You, of course, I mean, there's few better than you than when it comes to Steph memories and best Steph moments. For you personally, all of the great moments in games that you have called, obviously there's so many playoff ones, and those maybe take precedent over anything else. But this one feels like it had to be up there because this team is building something special, it feels like, right now. And the Warriors needed every single one of those 56 points last night. Where does this one rank anywhere high on your personal list of Steph games that you have had the pleasure of calling?
Yeah, it will, and I think it has a chance to really be that. But I think if it leads to what they want, you know, if it leads to getting in the playoffs and going deep in the playoffs and getting a run, you know, it's a great regular season moment, but. But again, the one thing this dynastic run has taught me is it's not all about the numbers or the points or whatever. It's about winning. And so sometimes we get caught up in all the analytics and the numbers. It's really about winning. And to me, like I think his best moment ever was game four in Boston in 22. They're down 2-1 against a talented team on their court. It's a raucous court. And he just put it right there. That one, as well as the Game 7 in Sacramento, because there are two games the Warriors had to have. You know, one was elimination or move on. And, you know, you're on the road, and he scores 50 in a Game 7. And then you take the Boston game where he just, you know, just put the team on his back and refused to go back home 3-1. To me, those are the two games that stick out for me. But yeah, I think this game really can be the game that we look back on in a month or two and say that was the game. You know, Jimmy Butler was moving a little slow that night. They did, you know, sluggish in the first half after flying for 6 hours the day before, and you know, Steph Curry put the team on his back and they refused to lose and they continued to climb up in the Western standings.
It was incredible just to watch it, especially unfold in the third quarter. Was there a moment last night when it kind of clicked in that Steph Curry maybe was going to be authoring something really special?
It's when he shot the three and it hit the top of the backboard. when a shooter sees that and the ball bounces around and it goes in like that, you know, then I think he thought, oh, okay, it's one of those nights where I'm going to get those bounces, right? And so he started hunting shots immediately after that. And that to me was a sign like, okay, here we go. And he just, you know, went off and blasted it. And, you know what, they're five games above 500 for the first time since the end of November. And they're, as the kids like to say, they're trending in the right direction.
They definitely are. 7-1 in the Jimmy Butler era. For those of us who weren't in Orlando last night, Tim, if we were watching on TV or listening to you here on 95.7 The Game, it kind of sounded at times like a home game. The Orlando crowd, I know there were a lot of Warrior fans there, but also you get in those modes, and even if you are a fan of the Magic and you're watching Steph do his historic thing that he tends to do, he kind of wins over everybody. But what was the environment like inside of that arena in Orlando last night?
I knew there were a lot of Warrior fans there, but I was surprised in the third quarter just how many people responded. And I think what we're getting on the road now is not only Warrior fans or, you know, little kids who are really Magic fans, but they love Steph Curry. So they come out to watch and hope that he, you know, does something like he did last night. And I think once he got going, you know, the Warrior fans got louder. The Orlando fans got a little quiet because their team's been scuffling and they've been banged up all year. And so, you know, they were coming off a 40-point loss to Cleveland in that building. So the first half, you know, the Orlando fans thought, okay, all right, we're going to get it back now. And then, you know, in that third quarter, and don't forget, give Quinton Post some credit. His points right off the bat in the third kind of got the Warriors going. And it was a great move by the coaching staff and Steve Kerr to have him start, give Orlando a different look out there. And Quinton took advantage of that.
Can you quantify just what Jimmy Butler has meant to the team in terms of, you know, not necessarily the points and rebounds and the rest of it, but the intangibles, Tim? Because Mark and I were having this discussion, and Quentin Post, to me, is, pun intended, a poster child of somebody who's benefiting from having a guy like Jimmy Butler around.
Yeah, I think he has, and I think Pajemski has, and I think Moses Moody has, because Jimmy knows how to play. He knows what angles are. He knows, you know, what he knows that he makes a certain action, a cut, a pass. He knows that where the second move is going to be. And so that allows him to set these guys up in certain situations and give them the kind of room and space that they can be successful with. And so, yeah, I mean, the numbers are fantastic. I mean, they're top five offense, defense since he arrived. You know, their points off turnovers is off the charts. I don't know if you know this, but in the 8 games, they're averaging 29 points off turnovers per game.
Wow.
And the next closest is Oklahoma City at 23. I mean, that's an astounding number. It was 30 going into last night. But, and to me, it's just his intelligence. He's a smart basketball player. And that is what this team kind of needed. It needed a high IQ guy who knows how to protect the ball and give you a good valued possession. And
oh,
take shit down, everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, Tim. No, I think you're right. And you're talking about one of the areas in which Jimmy Butler has helped this team. We've been talking a little bit today about all of the areas and trying to figure out exactly where his impact has been felt the most, because you're talking about points off of turnovers. He's had a major impact there. He's also helped the Warriors in terms of getting to the free throw line and making a higher percentage of their free throws. He's making it easier for Moody and for Pajemski and for Quentin Post. There's also this abstract of where he's just taken the load off of Steph, and maybe he's allowing Steph to have the energy necessary to do what he did last night. Steph hasn't played the last two fourth quarters before last night's game, and a big part of that is because Jimmy Butler helped them build big leads. So if I were to ask you, where has Jimmy Butler's impact been felt the most, how would you answer that?
Wow. Again, I would just say raising the IQ of the team, it just making it a smarter, less chaotic squad. I think the Warriors at times were their own worst enemy in the first half of the season, and I think he's kind of keeping that, you know, problem from arising too much, and it's allowing the Warriors to be a much more efficient team. I just really think it's his IQ has brought, you know, dividends both offensively and defensively. It allows Steph to go, you know, crazy last night, and you know, and once he got hot, Jimmy knew what to do. He was setting screens and making passes and all the rest to get Steph open. You know, and if Steph doesn't have the kind of night, to be quite honest, then maybe the highlight of the broadcast was Dan Dibley telling me about Flubber. So,
yeah, I'm glad you got that. And I was listening because it's always, you know, text the announcer at Warriors Vox.
There you go.
You were shouting out Blue Sky as well. And Tim was talking about in honor of Gene Hackman. And tip of the cap to R.C. Davis for a fantastic opening, which was from the movie Hoosiers. And so Tim was asking about best basketball movies ever. And I tweeted at him, Flubber.
Because you made an appearance as a basketball player in Flubber?
Correct. I actually scored the only points in the first half for our team. They didn't show it. We were down 57-3 at the half, Tim, and then we got flubberized, and we came from 54 down to get the W.
You had the only points of the first half.
Yeah, it was not featured. It was a three. It was a corner three. It was not above the break, as you would say. But it was just a gimme corner three.
I'm shocked that when the casting director for Hoosiers, he didn't call you, you know, to get you back on the floor.
Well, honestly, I resemble Ollie, for those of you who've seen the film, who is the scrawny towel boy who had to come up big, Grandy, as you remember.
Of course.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't even know if you've seen the movie.
Of course I've seen Hoosiers.
Yeah. And just before we get back to the Warriors, Tim, I will point out that that's the single most awkward love scene in movie history between the late Gene Hackman and Barbara Hershey.
I may have to go hunting and try to find a more awkward one, but that's a It's a pretty good call. Yeah. I kind of like that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, anyway.
Tim, we got a five-game road trip right now the Warriors do. They're 1-0. A lot of us on the outside trying to maybe aim for 4-1. What do you think is a realistic goal for this Warrior team on this road trip? Because you're in Philly now. There's no Embiid. That's a team that is really, really struggling. They've lost 9 games in a row.
Yeah.
You got Charlotte, a team that they just dominated at home, although you never know what happens on the road. Then you got the two teams in New York, and the Knicks and the Nets. What do you think is the target on this five-game road trip?
I think that, you know, you get greedy at this point. You know, you got the first one down. I think you can beat Philadelphia. I think you can beat Brooklyn and Charlotte. So I think you look for 4-1 or better. I think it's time to get greedy. You know, we're going into March now. You know, it's not October or November anymore, and I think it's time to look at that. And I think they can do that. They're playing at a level where they can do that. And I know Jimmy is questionable for tomorrow with a back sprain. It kind of makes sense. He didn't look right last night. So, but even with that, I still think they're good enough to win, you know, more than 3 games on this trip. And I think at this point you just go get it because it's right there. You're climbing the ladder. You got teams, you know, not only looking up at you now who are looking down at you throughout the season. Now you got teams looking over their shoulder at you. So I think you got to keep that momentum rolling.
And the last time that they won 7 in a row was 2022, and we know how that season ended. So go ahead and win 7 in a row and keep on pushing. Tim, I want to ask you about Jonathan Kuminga and, you know, not only how you think he's going to fit when he returns, but what are you seeing from him early on in this trip and how much he's probably champing at the bit to get back?
Yeah, I'm sure he is. And you know, I haven't talked to him about it, but he's busy. He's working out with the young coaches every day and some of the other players to get his scrimmage again. There was an optional workout today. I'm sure he was it there and working out. I chose my veteran option not to go. But like the service here, boys. Like the service. I think he's excited about it, and I think he really wants to play because – you know, he's looking at this team having the success. He's looking at playing with another guy like Jimmy Butler, and I think it's going to be great for him. I think this whole scenario is set up perfectly for him to come in. People are worried about the spacing, but I think Jimmy Butler is a smart enough player to figure this out. And I think that, you know, having Kuminga, especially with the success of their starting lineup right now, and now you can come off the bench, say, with Kuminga, Hield, Payton, you know, that's a really good, pretty good rotation to start. And I think it's going to make the Warriors, you know, even better.
Tim Roy with us here on 95.7 The Game on Willard and Dibbs. It's Dibbs and Grandy with you. Hey, Tim, watching this game last night and listening to you and Steph making 12 threes and 56 points and 7-1 with Jimmy, I'm having a hard time not feeling like something special is developing here. And you got your fingers on the pulse better of this team better than anybody else. And there feels like an extra, more verve with Steph and the enthusiasm and the passion with which this team is playing right now. Do you feel that? Do you feel like something special could be building here?
I do. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of Boston in 21-22. Remember, they were 500 right in the middle of the year and took off in the second half of the season. And I think the Warriors kind of with the trade, I think it kind of solidified the rotation. You brought in the guy that you need to bring in, a high IQ guy, not just a guy who can score, but a guy who can help you all over the floor. And I think it's, you know, Podziemski came off his injury and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he's a little anxious at the start of the season. That's all gone now. He's right in the flow and playing the way we think he can play. Moses Moody having the best stretch of his career. So, yeah, I think there is something special here. There's a whole different vibe around this team since the trade. And it's there's a belief among this team right now that wasn't there in the first half of the year. And, you know, they're you know, the first half of the season, if they were playing that game last night, they would have lost that game. They would not have won that game. But there's a belief now on this team, and they're confident in making plays coming down the stretch. And I think that it's showing with the type of games they're winning.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Tim, great stuff. We appreciate you taking out some time, and we'll be listening tomorrow in Philly.
Okay, Dibs, I expect a signed copy of Flubber at my house when I come off this trip.
So. Yeah, I've got a stack of VHS tapes at home, Tim. I'll shoot one over to you.
It's like my friend Bill Schoening, who is the Spurs announcer. He's a musician, and he has some CDs that he has cut and sold and things like that. And he says that he has a million seller. He says he has a million down in the cellar. So there you go.
That's good. That's good. Tip your waitress. He'll be here all night.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks,
Safe travels, Tim.
See you guys.
All right. That's the great Tim Roy, voice of the Warriors, here with us on 95.7 The Game. Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy. Tim's the best.
Yeah.
And it's hard to not have a little bit of jealousy knowing these moments that he's been behind the mic for, Dibs.
Yeah, it's been a long run, though. You can have jealousy, but you also have to have
respect for how good he is, too.
And the appropriate amount of empathy for what he went through, and Bob Fitzgerald as well, and all those years when, you know, as a broadcaster, you know this, you can't really keep it real. When your team is 17-65, you can't just come out and say, oh, God, this thing is this and that, and it's a dumpster fire and all the rest of it. You can't be super pom-pom guy. You got to toe the line. But when you have year after year of misery, yeah, you could be jealous now, but you also have to appreciate what he went through for all those years.
Those guys deserve it. They deserve this decade of dominance,
man,
considering what they put up
with. Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Decade of dominance. And, you know, even if this year doesn't end in dominance or a title, you got last night. You got 56 from the chef, a 68-footer. It's getting longer every time I mention it. 12 threes. I mean, no matter what, he got that last night to enjoy.
Yeah, and I think the first thing that Tim Roy told us is very, very true, and I think we both feel the same way. You just got to bask in this when you have it. And you don't know how many more of those you're going to get from Steph. So that was special last night. There's no doubt about it. We can talk more about that. Where does this Steph moment rank in your personal rankings? It's pretty high up there for me, and it's kind of incredible because he has so many of them. You can let us know, 888-957-9570. Plus, is this season beginning to feel special to you? Yes or no, and why? You can let us know as well. And also, you can weigh in on our other question that we've been asking and discussing today. Where has Jimmy Butler's impact been felt the most? I think there's one more area we haven't really touched on just yet that we can get to when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you here on 95.7 The Game. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. More when we return next on 95.7 The Game.
The only points of the first half.
Yeah, it was not featured. It was a three. It was a corner three. It was not above the break, as you would say. But it's just a gimme corner three.
I'm shocked that when the casting director for Hoosiers, he didn't call you. You know, get you back on the floor.
Now, back to Will and Divvy on 95.7 The Game.
Would have been great if you were in Hoosiers. That would have been cool.
Yeah, it also would have been great if I actually got to be on the court during Flubber. And I'll make a long story short, and I won't get into the full story about how it got cast, but I got cast in the movie, and as we started the filming, day one, I was slated to be the starting center on what we call the nerd team.
The center.
It was the big guys against the little guys, and I was the tallest guy on our team at 5'8.5". And so day one of filming, I'm going to be on the court for everything. Day two, all of a sudden I get a tap on the shoulder. They had decided to write some dialogue for my character, and so they had to bring in a real actor. And so your boy got shuttled to the bench.
That's too bad.
It's all right. I mean, you could see me in that. It's just one scene I was in. It's the big scene of the movie. It's about a 12-minute scene,
yeah.
And you can see me legitimately like 10 times. And what you can also see is there's a couple of shots where they have a distant shot of the bench, and it's not me. I actually quit the movie early.
Did you?
Yes. The thing was taking like day after day. Okay, three more days. And then after 3 days, it's like two more days. I had four jobs, and I was coaching a high school basketball team. And these are 14-hour days. So it became your life. And finally, I was like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I'm out.
Well, how old were you?
It was 1996. I was 28.
Huh.
Your age.
Oh, yeah.
It's 28.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I've watched Flubber since I met you and since I knew that you were in the movie. So I've never, like, seen it and seen you.
Right.
But I've definitely, I know exactly, of course, the scene that you're talking about. Yeah. I've seen Flubber a bunch growing up.
It's the basketball scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see number 11 come out on the blue team with my long, flowing orange hair that I used to have. And it's kind of hilarious. 30 years ago, almost, Grandy.
Crazy.
Filmed on Treasure Island.
Yeah, I knew that.
In a warehouse, yeah. And the late Cap Lavin, father of Steve Lavin.
Okay.
Currently coaching at the University of San Diego and having a very poor year. Poor guy. But his dad was the one who hit me to the audition. And they had the audition at Drake High School, which is now Archie Williams in San Anselmo.
There you go.
So there you have it.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, that was a long story made long, and I apologize for that.
I contributed to that. I kept asking questions and furthering the conversation, so we can share the blame.
Yeah, super fun. One thing I learned about being on in a movie is if you have to go get fitted for wardrobe, they pay you for that.
Oh.
There's like a wardrobe fee, and everything is a fee. And they got craft services where there's a table where there's just food. You just walk up if there's a break in the action. Pop in a baked potato and start eating.
Sounds good to me.
Your boy got fat in that film.
Fat red pumpkin.
Kind of like me and you at a Niner game.
Oh, I've gone grocery shopping at a Niner game.
That's what I'm doing. All of us, right, Lucas?
I think I just recently ran through all my snacks from the Monday Night Football game against the Lions, and we're talking about 2 months ago now.
Yeah, the 30th.
So
anyway.
Warriors, hell of a win yesterday in Orlando. Steph Curry, 56 points. And I think, Dibs, even though Jimmy Butler had arguably his worst game since he became a Warrior, and I'll just read through his box score here. He had 5 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 turnovers, 1 for 7 from the field, 0 for 3 from downtown, and 3 of 4 from the free throw line. I think we can still feel his impact every single time he touches the floor. Even if he was scoring 0 points, you can feel the impact. And one question that we've been throwing out today, and we welcome your phone calls and your texts, is where has Jimmy Butler's impact been felt the most? And we talked through a bunch of tangible things like the free throws and the turnovers and, you know, making life easier for Moody and for Pajemski, impacting their games. Maybe something a little more abstract, like taking the onus off of Steph on a random game against Charlotte or against Dallas. As a result, Steph doesn't have to work as hard, and therefore he has the energy and the ability to do what he did last night in Orlando. I think what ultimately might be the biggest thing, Dibs, is that Jimmy Butler, he provides just belief to this Warrior team. And belief that they are playing for something more meaningful now, that they have actually meaningful basketball that is ahead of them. And I think in turn that provides Steph and Draymond with energy. And the way that I asked the question to Tim Roy was, are you feeling like that verve and that little something extra right now around the team? And I think that comes from what Jimmy Butler represents as a player who is going to allow the Warriors to play that meaningful basketball once again. And, you know, if you just give Steph a hint, you give Steph a hint of championship basketball being a possibility, just a possibility, not saying like a likelihood, but just a possibility. Like it's like the children's book, Dibs. Like if you give a mouse a cookie.
Oh, we have all those.
Right? If you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to ask for a glass of milk. If you give Steph a sniff of a championship, he's going to take advantage of it. He's going to go for it as hard as he possibly can, and he might do it. Like, that's how good Steph is. If you give Steph just a sniff, just a hint of an opportunity to be competing for something special, you know you're going to get the best out of Steph. And I think, honestly, the beginning part of the year, maybe other than 12-3, but when they were in the doldrums in December and in January and for the beginning part of February, I don't think Steph felt like there was that legitimate possibility that there could be something special coming out of this season. But with Jimmy Butler in town, I think there is that possibility in the back of Steph's mind, Draymond as well, and as a result, you're seeing them play with a different level of like ferocity than we have for the rest of the season.
I think the urgency would have been there anyway, but you're right about the feeling that they're exuding and knowing that these games are, they all matter, but now it could lead to something even bigger and something that could be a grander accomplishment because of the team that they have now with Jimmy Butler. And it's fair to say that. It's not only because of Jimmy, but when you go 7-1, when a guy joins your team, and it's the way they've gone about it, too. They are throttling teams. And yesterday is a great example of, you mentioned it before, like, that's a game that they probably don't win in November or December.
No doubt, yeah.
You get down, and it's hard to dig out of it. And I know a lot of that was Steph Curry dealing with the bilateral tendonitis in games and whatnot. But just since Jimmy has come, they've gone out there and just pounded people. 21-14, they lost to Dallas. Houston, they won by 7, but they were up by a lot more. And then it's 24-24-36. And then they won by 6 last night. And last night was an absolute gut check because you were down. Steph hits the 65, or I got to say 70-footer now, as we keep mentioning it.
By the time we're done in an hour, it's going to be off the court. It's going to be a 100-footer.
Totally. So he drills it, and that barely keeps you afloat to be down 14 at the break. Yep. And then you flip it in the third. And then you kind of have to hold on a little bit, and Steph Curry makes a couple of big shots in the fourth, and you go out and win it. But I do think you're right that earlier in the year, it feels like that's the kind of game that it wouldn't have slipped away. It just it got away, and it would have stayed away.
Yeah, they wouldn't have made a run. They wouldn't have gotten back in the game in the third quarter. And whether it's a conscious decision being made, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's Steph saying, all right, I'm not going to try now because we're down by 17. This game's over. But there's like a different level that you reach when you're feeling that kind of confidence and that enthusiasm, and you feel like there's something that is worth losing. And right now, the Warriors have something that's worth losing. Oftentimes, when they were in the middle of this stretch of terrible play, there was, of course, the threat of, well, if we keep losing these games, it's going to be hard for us to make the playoffs, but it's hard to kind of convince yourself that you've got something, anything possible when you've lost 8 of your last 10 games, and you're struggling to stay afloat. But now you're on a good streak. You have won a bunch of games in a row. You've won 7 of 8 since Jimmy Butler's been acquired. You have been dominating teams. They had 3 straight wins of 24 or more points. If they had beaten Orlando by 24 or more, I think that would have been a franchise record, 4 in a row. Like, they are on the doorstep of doing things that they haven't ever done in this decade of dominance, as we said earlier. So now there is the threat of, like, losing something. You have something to hold on to. And as crazy as it sounds, Dibs, you're only a half game out of the 6th seed, when a couple of weeks ago we were thinking the 6th seed might be a little too tall of a goal for them to accomplish, and now it almost feels like it's the baseline. If you don't get the 6, it's a major disappointment.
Right? I mean, we were thinking about play-in games and whatnot, and we haven't even mentioned the play-in tournament at all, because it does feel like
that would be disappointing.
They're going to blow right past it, and they're sitting at 7, and they've won 5 in a row. They've won 7 of 8 and all the rest of it, and you look, and the Clippers are right there, half game ahead of you. And the Rockets aren't really out of reach, nor are the Lakers. It's a 5-game gap, which it feels like a lot when you have 25 games to go, and it is a lot. But when you start to think about some of the head-to-heads that you still have, you have the Lakers. That's an automatic 1-game switcheroo. You've got Houston down the stretch, down near the end of it. And the schedule, it breaks kind of well for you.
No doubt.
We got Philadelphia coming up on Saturday tomorrow, yep. And no Embiid, out for the year. Charlotte should be easy pickings. New York will be tough. Brooklyn's a funky one because, you know, they play well, and then they also don't play well. And then you've got the big-time showdown with Detroit when you come back home. But that's a 7-game homestand where you start to look at the schedule, and you can get a little bit greedy and think about, you know, making some real headway toward the 6 and beyond.
Let me ask you this, Dibs. Over the last 10 games, so that includes all of the Jimmy Butler era and the 2 games prior, so that includes the loss in Utah and the loss in LA versus the Lakers, and those were 2 pretty rough losses, but let's include those to get a nice even round number of 10 games.
And Utah was the deadline day.
Yes.
Or the